Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hope everybody's doing well today. I want to welcome everybody to the Unimpressed Podcast. And we have a friend calling in from Los Angeles. And he is a former athlete, played for the Dallas Cowboys and a few NFL teams. And he's got a book out called Aggressively Human, and his name is Steve Wright. Welcome to the show, Steve. How are you doing today?
Thank you, John. Doing wonderful. Living in Malibu, sun shining. Life is good. I'm healthy and blessed to be on your show.
Well, when you hear the word aggressively human, I mean, that speaks a lot to, you know, what we do in life and, you know, what resonates with you and why did you write that book?
For one, the pandemic and the lockdown, I'd been toying with it for at least a decade, just jotting little stories down. And just, I've had a really interesting life just through my football and business career and what I believe is karma, putting good things out, good things come back to you. But then there was really my wife that saw the animal spirit of a golden retriever in me, a guy with a big heart, but also able to turn it on into a pit bull if needed. And that was the switch I always had to make in football. You go into the locker room and start putting your pit bull on and then come out of the locker room after a game and, you know, you've been amped for 3 hours and now you have to go out and hold kids and talk to microphones, and it's a crazy mix. And I was fortunate enough to be able to shut it off and not take it, the anger and the frustrations home, and, you know, abuse others outside of football. And so it was just the kind of the yin and the yang we all have in us, and it's how to balance it. The tough guy, and then the kind heart, kind of in a nutshell.
When you think about your career in the NFL and before you got to the NFL, what was your anticipation before you went into the NFL, and how did those thoughts change when you got in and understood what it was and understood how you had to perform? What was there a thought process change there and transition that you didn't expect?
Nothing I didn't expect. I really kind of led my life on not trying to expect out too far. It's really, I don't know how where I learned this, but really staying in the moment. And it kind of started in high school when, wow, it's game time, you know, and the band's playing, the cheerleaders, the crowd's out there, and run out there. And you kind of have to get your alter ego going. And then it increases, and then you get into college. And then by the time you make it into the NFL and you're running out into a stadium of 75,000 people playing against future Hall of Famers, you got to get in a pretty weird place mentally. And it's that became very difficult to do through, it was actually 13 years. I played a little bit in the USFL as well, but my mind got more tired than my body. The team was moving in 1994 up to Oakland, and I was just finishing my 11th year in the NFL, and I had an opportunity to do something else. And I was so ready to cut loose. I was just beat up from trying to just get into a weird place, you know, turn into an axe murderer for 3 hours. And so it kind of came kind of naturally. And there wasn't anything I really tried to anticipate or how am I going to do this? It just, that's what you got to do at that point in time.
So was it like a different character when you show up for work, you go into character?
Yeah, for sure. I'd get there, you know, just from the Raiders here, I'd get there 5 hours before the game would start, and the linemen would go out, and we'd go through our plays and audibles, and I'd go back in the locker room, I'd put on my headset and listen to Metallica, which I never listened to, but it's just violent, and then start taping my knuckles together so they're not going to come out when I'm grabbing or punching or something else and pounding coffee, and just sitting there, the sweat would start dripping off my chin. And just trying to think of the most hateful things you could possibly think of, making up scenarios in your head, and just so focused on this guy I'm going to be playing against. I've watched film of him all week, taken it home, slept with it, watched it all the time. Yeah, so it's you got to get really crazy. Mike Ditka, one of my great mentors, grabbed me when I was a rookie with Dallas. He was my special teams coach, and he could see I was getting frustrated. And he'd always take me for walks. and he'd throw his arm around me and say, you know, hey, I see how frustrated you're getting. Everybody here has got the physical tools. This is what's going to separate you. You're going to get your ass kicked. Figure it out fast. You're going to, you know, get beat. They're getting paid too. So figure it out and just win more than they do. But you got to get your head together, and you can't let it get away from you as well and be so angry and pissed off. I grab someone and start fighting and get thrown out and hurt the team. So it's just a really fine balance of being on the edge.
When you digest that in your life, I mean, and you said, you know, when you, after the game, how do you manage that mentally? I'm sure there's a lot of guys that couldn't manage it mentally.
Exactly. And I've got quite a bit of it in my book. Just the toughest guy that I've ever played with the Dallas Cowboys. He came in one morning with scratches all over his face, and he just knew his wife was probably on the other end of those scratches. And I'd see it with guys that I never even knew drank alcohol, flipped their car because they were drunk, and die. Other guys blowing their brains out because they were cut. It's a crazy life not being able to balance it. Myself, personally, grew up in a loving family, thank goodness, with a lot of support. And I was able to, the thing I had to do was raise it up for games. It was pretty easy and natural for me to come back down to a level of what you're seeing now. But turning it on and off was difficult. I'd go out into the parking lot after the games at the Coliseum, and everybody want to come over and talk to you or get an autograph. And you're still kind of in a crazy state of mind, sweating. And so it'd take you a little bit to come down, but this is where I prefer to be.
Now, where are you from originally?
I grew up in Minneapolis. I grew up in the Midwest, went to school in Northern Iowa. Family moved around quite a bit, so just learned to make a lot of friends in St. Louis. And I guess we did a little time in Connecticut, Deerfield, Illinois, north of Chicago, but mostly around Minneapolis.
In your family, what did mom and dad do?
My father, mom was the homemaker and my sports shuttle. She would feed me and love me and pick me up at practice and take me to and run around. My father was a salesman for 30 years with a company called Continental Can Company, canning beer and food and everything else. So he was getting transferred quite a bit, take the raise and take the move. And so off we go after a year or two living in one place. So I got used to change. So it was easy for me to go from Dallas. I went to the Baltimore Colts. Went with them to Indianapolis, signed a contract with the Oakland Invaders, got invited down to play in Los Angeles, and been in here ever since 1987.
So when you were coming up as a kid, what was your, you know, specialty? I mean, what were you really, really good at?
Running around and getting wild, whatever I was going to be playing, if it was hockey or baseball, basketball, track. Track, I was an All-American and shot put and discus, but we all played all the sports, which I go into here in the book as well. It's kids now are more defined as you're going to be a great football player. Well, I want to play basketball. No, you're going to be a good football player because I think you're going to make it there. And they're put in these guardrails of what they're going to be. We were just told just to play and have fun, which we did. And then, you know, after my senior year of high school, I was getting scholarships and went down to the University of Northern Iowa. Once you get into college, you're not really playing other sports. So it's kind of like the cream rises to the top. Football became the thing. And then my junior year of college, started getting pro letters and ended up down in Dallas.
So it looked like you got pretty big hands there. Anybody in your family an athlete or strong or anything like that?
No, just my dad had some pretty good hands. I got a few of those on my rear end quite often just to straighten me out. But yeah, I got some meat hooks, but they came in handy on the line down in the trench. Get a hold of some jersey and hang on tight.
And do you know what your lineage is? You look maybe Scandinavian.
Yeah, Scandinavian, Viking, English, Irish, Scottish, Norwegian. I actually have a family tree with all the names on it from 1492. It's the most incredible family tree I have ever seen. And I'm going to probably end up diving into that once the book starts to kind of mellow out over the next year or something. I've been seeing who some of these characters were. But yeah, Northern European.
So the strength of that obviously comes from your lineage. And one thing I talk about is your non-conscious. And the non-conscious is really kind of where scientists stop. you know, and if you understand what non-conscious is, basically, you know, predetermined traits that you have, because I feel too that you have some type of spirituality going as well that I can tell. You know, I don't know if I told you I'm a clairsentient, and I can feel when I talk to somebody, I can feel, and I can feel some energy from you. Do you think that spiritual side of you is what kind of kept you grounded? Because I definitely feel that you got a lot of energy around you.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm going to take that as a real compliment. I appreciate it. It's something that I've been working on. Got into Buddhism about probably 15 years ago. It just attracted me. I was Christian. I was leading groups within this large church and family. I grew up as a Presbyterian, and just none of it really resonated with me. And then I fell into a guy named Sadhguru, who I really enjoyed listening to. What I've done there now. But he was a smart, kind of fun, cool guy that motorcycles around the world and speaks at Harvard and Oxford and everything else. And so he's just kind of a real guy that I can see and feel. But the Buddhism kind of fell in place, and I started meditating. And I do it every morning for 15 to 20 minutes just to kind of set my intentions for the day and understand the things that issues I might run into. And so deal with them first while I'm sitting, and then come into it more balanced. And yeah, it's really helped me a lot. I appreciate you saying that, how you feel it. That's something I always want to resonate with everybody around me. It's the calm, because I'm a big guy and I don't want to be looked at as somebody that's scary or anything else, but just a loving heart ready to touch everybody. My motto has always been to leave people, places, and things better than I found them.
Well, you should dive into the Scandinavian stuff. I mean, the Norse were very, very powerful people, and they, you know, they created systems for the world that, you know, kind of defined a lot of things. And I think there's some ideology there that, you know, the Norse could have been some of the first people on the planet. And I think their skin color changed as they went south. Because it's very, very odd. Like talking to you, I can sit here and I can feel, like if I talk to somebody and they have a lot of energy around them, I can feel energy coming out of my hand. Like my hand will start doing stuff. Yeah. Because I've never met you before, and something told me you're Scandinavian, you know, that Viking strength. Do you ever feel anything like innately in you, like any types of energy or anything?
I do. And I especially feel it around animals. Animals, it's pretty crazy how animals will be attracted to me. And they just know that I'm safe. But they'll be growling at everybody else. They come over to me wagging their tail and just want to snuggle up and be held and touched. I think I project that quite a bit to other people as well. Yeah, I feel a real calmness, but again, I can swing the other way, you know, if and when needed. But trying to get away from that Viking berserker mode and more into the peaceful, loving mode.
Well, I'm kind of saying the same way, because I think it's the high sensibilities, because I've had birds and stuff follow me down the street before,
yeah.
You know, after I've did a meditation and things like that, because animals, from my research and things that I've looked at, you know, if I give energy to people or whatever, this other person who's, I don't know, a psychic medium, shaman, whatever you want to call them, said, John, when you give your energy away, she said, you need to meditate and think about bringing light energy into your crown chakra,
mm-hmm.
Right? Because if you give away that energy, you got to replenish. So mm-hmm. if you go there and meditate and you think about the light energy coming in your crown chakra, you know, and you can literally mentally feel this energy, you know, if you think about it and think about a light coming through, whether it's Jesus or whoever is giving you this energy, you can really direct it through your body. And the first time I did that, I was walking up from where I did this meditation at, and I looked to the left of me and I see 200 robin, like to the left of me. I was like, what is this, a damn bird sanctuary? And all of a sudden, this whole flock of birds comes around me. And I'm like, what the hell's going on? Look behind me. They're not behind me. They're in front of me. There's like five of them. There's like five or six of them walking beside me down the street. They're swirling. And I walked about 9 houses, and then it made a dog leg. And then the tree line stopped. And when the tree line stopped, they stopped. And I didn't think anything about it. But they say when you meditate, when animals look at human beings, they see human beings as swirls. So if you slow down that swirl, right, and the more you can slow that down and become symbiotic with nature, that's supposedly a direction to heaven on earth.
Very cool.
Right? Because where you can You know, if you can get there and slow those swirls down and appear that way to these animals, that's why they feel comfortable. And that's probably why they feel comfortable with you. Have you been studied anything like that or heard anything like that?
I just know that there's energy levels and other dimensions that we just don't know of as humans. And you can just see the dimensions of the abilities of the energies that animals and birds have for each other and their surroundings. They've got hummingbirds out here, and they'll get close, but I've had them come and land on my hand and then drink their sugar water out of my hand. And then just about a week ago, they'll fly up and they're looking, and they always get at eye level. They're never down at chin level or shoulder or anything. They get up right at eye level, and they want to feel your energy coming from your eyes. I can go on a few stories with this. But this one hummingbird was flying around my face within probably 6 inches of my face, and I was just holding still, and he flew around, and he stuck his beak in my ear and was just sitting there with his beak in my ear, and I wasn't moving. So he's feeling really comfortable with my energy. But then other times I've been around, say, horses, and I'm a little scared of horses. They're just big and, you know, looking at their hoofs and looking at their bodies. And then I look up and you look in their eyes and the thing just reared back because he just felt this strong energy coming from me. The same thing happened when we were traveling in Indonesia. We were in a wild jungle, monkey area. And so we're getting toured through. There's about half a dozen of us. And he said, just whatever you do, don't look at them in their eyes. And this mother was holding on to a little baby monkey. This female monkey was holding on to a little baby monkey. And I just thought it was so cute. And I'm just looking at the body and looking at the little baby. And then I just kind of glanced up and looked at the mother. And she, when I saw her eyes, she screamed. And you could just hear the bushes shaking as the monkeys were coming in from all directions. And the guy just told us all, put your head down and keep moving fast. And he walked us out of there, but they were grabbing at me. They can just feel the energy coming out of your eyes. And it's the same thing with sharks. I live on the beach here, and it's what you got to do. People swim away from a shark. You want to get vertical with them and you want to stare at them, and they can feel your energy as well. They're not going to come after. They're not used to seeing something vertical in the water. They're used to seeing something swimming away, or that's when they come up behind and usually do their attack. But as soon as you, if there's a shark in the water, we're all trained to, all the surfers, you just get vertical, get off your board and get down and get straight with them. And they'll think twice about it.
Now, have you got energy coming out of your hands or anything like that?
No, I have not felt that, John.
Interesting. Because you probably, how long you been doing this?
Well, just the meditation and the Buddhism and everything for, you know, I don't know, 12, 15 years, something like that.
Interesting.
I haven't dug real deep into it, but just been enjoying my sits, and that might be another thing to start looking into.
Yeah.
If you got some ideas, throw them my way.
Well, I don't know. I was the last person that I thought would have this show up in my life, and it's all of a sudden it just showed up. And it's funny you mentioned Sadhguru. I mean, I remember years ago, his narrative and the way he talked resonated with me as well.
Nice.
You know, there's something to the way he delivers his message, don't you think? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, it's fun. It's real. It's talking with one of your buddies.
So with the book, I mean, how do you translate some of this stuff in the book? And what are you trying to achieve with the book?
The achieve was just more or less, for one, enjoy the read, a fun summer.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
breed for guys. It's, you know, women that like football too, but it's more than a football story. It's being aware. I remember just being a young kid. I just want to show people that there's other ways to do things. I think I was pretty aware when I was a young kid, just early in my life, seeing prejudices that turned me off. When I was 5 years old at the country club with my father and my mother and father, and just seeing how the help was treated, I just remember it just kind of hitting my heart, going, that's really weird. And then other people would really love the help and be really kind to them. And I just think, wow, that's what I want to be like. Or getting to training camp my rookie year, and I write about this along with some of these other stories. But one of our tight ends, Doug Cosby, married all the other guys, you know, the older guys are married too. And we'd all go out a couple hours before curfew. We get through with meetings at 9 o'clock and get to El Torito restaurant out here, and there'd be a ton of girls, and it was great for these us, you know, myself and other 20 year old guys. And then it would just really turn me off to see some of these married guys with their rings on, making out with some girl, leaving the restaurant. And I just go like, wow, that's just weird. Cause my parents were married for 54 years or something before they both passed. But I just like, I don't want to be like that. Or I didn't want to be that prejudice thing to treat people that way. So it's just been a process. I just kind of wanted to share that, my mentors, with treating people right. It's come back to me tenfold, if you got time, but just a quick example of that, of treating somebody nice. A shoe salesman for a brand new startup turf shoe company came into the Raiders locker room, and I saw just nobody was giving him the time of day and kind of treating him like crap. And I sat there and talked with him. And he asked me if I'd put a pair of shoes on and wear them in the game. He'd give me $1,500. And sure, I'll do that. Yeah, they're happy to do that. Turned out he was just a hero with this brand new startup company and wore the shoes, and they were great and everything else. Time went on. I retired, started my company. And then the 1996 Summer Olympics came up, and my partner and I said, let's go try to see if we can land a job. Went out there and did our sales pitch against Raytheon and GE, you know, these monster companies in Atlanta. Got back to our place in Venice here and got a call saying, hey, you got the job. No way. What GE did? How did we get the job? He goes, you don't remember me, do you? My name's Mike Ariano, and he's in charge of all field equipment for the Olympics, the 96 Summer Olympics. And he goes, you don't remember me. I was the shoe salesman, and you were the only cool guy in that locker room that was nice to me. And so I wasn't really trying to get anything out of it, but I was just kind to him. Now it's your turn. And he goes, do us right and keep these Olympics cool. And we just excelled. And, you know, just stories like that. I've got quite a few of those, just kind of making the opportunity before it's there. And there's ways to do it. It's, you know, and it's kind of simplified in the book. And it's just basically being kind to people. You just don't need to be a crazy prick. Like, you're really seeing a lot more angst out in the world today. And I just see it out here, just in the driving and the way people look at each other. I could walk downtown and pass 50 people, and not one person would look and say hello.
Yeah.
You know, when you say hello to them, they kind of like, well, I don't know you. What are you saying hello to me for? It's just, it's kind of a simple life, but it's the way I've done it. And I think I've been fairly successful. But more or less than anything, I want everybody to enjoy a fun read inside the locker rooms, what goes on behind the locker room doors before the games, the fights on the practice field that nobody sees, guys getting blown up and knocked out.
What kind of fights? Like some crazy fights?
Yeah, I write about a great one just at during the season. Howie Long, who I practice against every day, Howie gave me endorsement on this, along with Tony Dorsett and Eric Dickerson and Marcus Allen and everybody else. But yeah, we were at practice one day and it was hot, and we're doing the one-on-one pass blocking drill. It's just you and one other guy, and everybody watches, and there's always a winner and a loser. And Howie and Bill Lewis got into a little, you know, push. And then as Howie walked away, Bill told him to F off. And Howie turned around, and I was just getting to know Howie at the time. This is my first year there in 87. Howie just kind of figuratively left the building and asked him what he said. And as he walked over to him, Bill said it again and got the F out and didn't even get a chance to say off out. And he caught an uppercut that blew him up, that his helmet was going away, his mouth guard was going another way, and his front teeth were sticking through his lip, and he was out cold. And it's just that the public never sees these kind of things. And so he went in, got his lip all sewed up, and he was back on the field in about 15 minutes, and they were friends. It's just the swinging of the pendulum of anger and how to manage it. How we got in a lot of trouble, too, from Al Davis for ruining his product, hurting, damaging his product. But just a lot of behind-the-scenes stories, crazy stuff in the locker room that would just drop your jaw.
Well, when you think about that, and you think about talking about your sensibilities, and you're talking about keeping yourself calm, and I'm the same way, too. It's like, it's almost like prickly. You know, I think if you have those high sensibilities, and it's almost like you're prickly, and you can turn on a dime very, very quick, you know, because that feeling, you can feel things very, very quick. Is that what you experienced when you said you could go the other way?
Yeah, it is. And then, you know, into the mellower things of this is my second marriage, my wife's second marriage. We've been married now for 10 years. We live in a small place here on the beach, and we have really never raised our voices to each other. Not that my first wife and I did, but I was learning. And, you know, I bark back at something when she's telling me something that's really bothering her about me. And so I bark back, you know, and not listening, just, you know, wanting to be heard. And, you know, it took that life lesson of those 10 years of being married to figure it out, like, keep your big mouth shut. You know, I love this woman. Listen to what she's got to say. And so if my wife, Lizzie, who wrote the book with me, has got an issue and she's coming at me and, you know, upset about something, just keep your mouth shut and listen, because I love her and I do care what she thinks and what she's got to say. So I'm going to listen to her. And I'm always happy that I did, because I don't have to go back and apologize for barking in and interrupting her. And I've heard what she's had to say. And she always comes back to me a half hour later or something and says, thank you for listening. You know, you don't need to be told that too many times. Like, hey, that's the right way to go about it.
Interesting.
So it's just, we learn every day. And that was huge for me.
And when you're coming out of the NFL, and you think about, hey, what I do now, you know, how is that transition?
I was really fortunate. I've always looked at everything with open eyes to cool possibilities. Again, staying very present. But I was in Palm Springs, 1989 or something, 1990, and mist was blowing above the restaurant, keeping the patrons cool. I was getting ready to go to training camp, and then we were going to be playing in the Coliseum in August, and it's just, there's not a breath of air moving in there. I thought, what a great place to have it. Talked to the manager, showed me how to do it. I talked Art Shell into letting me try it before a game, and I write all about it in my book, but I called my company Cloudburst, and he said he was going to tear it down if it pisses anybody off. And I said I'd help you. Turned out everybody was flipping. It was the first mist cooling system in the NFL. And then it turned out a couple guys in the stands were from Hollywood Park, that there's 1,000 horses out here in LA in this Hollywood Park. They had me come over, and we ended up doing a ton of barns over there. And it turned into just a killer business. So when the team was moving to Oakland, I incorporated my company called the Cloudburst and started developing better systems, and then landed the 96 Summer Olympics. And so that was all high pressure. Then I got a bunch of low pressure pieces. Like, I think I had something like 40 SKUs, the extension kits, and you screw them into your valve outside the hose outlet, and then tack it up along the patio and put down the mist. Had 40 SKUs in over 1,500 stores, Home Depots and Targets and Lowe's. And so I never really had a chance to kind of get out of it. God, what am I going to do now? I've told every athlete that I play golf with and things afterwards, look for those opportunities while you're playing, while you're at the top of your game. I've been invited to 100 celebrity golf tournaments. I'm the celebrity, and I'm in there with three other guys. And usually the three other guys were CEOs of a bank or CEO of this or president of that. Make those contacts now. Get their business cards. Send them an 8x10. How much pleasure it was playing with you guys. I hope our paths cross again. And I guarantee you, I could have called them 10 years later and said, hey, this is Steve Wright. I'm doing football and I'm looking for a job. You know, it's got anything open? I guarantee you, they'd say, hell yes. You were a cool cat. We, you know, loved playing you, loved your attitude. come in and let's take a look. But take advantage of those opportunities now so you don't have to just, oh, what am I going to do now? And then a lot of guys, I don't know, I just think, you know, you've got, especially the guys now, they got so much money, you don't really need to go out and do a whole lot. Set up foundations, do a lot of giving back. But, you know, get your money with a portfolio manager, which I was fortunate enough to do. And I've got stories about that in there as well.
Now, does the NFL, is there any type of pension or anything you still receive from the NFL?
Sure, yeah. I'm receiving it now, and yeah, the benefits are getting better. But yes, they're taking care of us, but it would certainly be nice to see it better. Unfortunately, I'm not one of those guys that really needs it, because again, I found a portfolio manager, a wealth management company that's really done right by me, because I'm not a money guy. I'm a football player, I'm an athlete, I'm an entrepreneur, so on and so forth. So find someone that does that and do that for you.
Nice. Well, yeah, you hear so many different stories, and you know, hear a lot of guys going broke and things like that. There should be some better practices, because I knew this lawyer in New York City who represented a lot of athletes, and he said that probably 90% of his, you know, clients went broke.
It's crazy, and it's just, you know, I hate the pressure of the social media. Now you just, everybody tried to one-up each other. And yeah, back in my playing days, I knew a wide receiver for the Cardinals that lived in an apartment, the one-bedroom apartment he was just renting, and he had six cars out front, you know, Lamborghini or Rolls, and everything. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
I think the NFL, and I don't know, but I think the NFL is kind of trying to guide these guys. There's more resources for them to tap into on financial managers or guidance in business, how to really feel out if a business is real or not. Yeah, it's just, it's crazy, because then it kind of puts a cloud over everybody else, you know. Guys going broke. Fortunately, I've never done that. But also, too, I'm a minimalist. I could show you in here. I don't try to compete with anybody. My car is actually, I drive a Beamer 328i. It's a 2014, I think. I don't need to be doing anything. I only drive maybe 5,000 miles a year just around town here.
Yeah.
But just get rid of stuff. I never tried to compete and get a better watch than somebody, or, you know, what do you think of my new car?
Yeah.
But it was a lot of competition. It's just, I don't know. And I was fortunate to be have a loving upbringing. I don't know, one of these guys just, they're competing against one another, and they got to be full of flash. And that's kind of what I see the NFL as now. It bumps me out to watch it.
If you want to find the book.
Yeah, you can come to my website, writeauthor.com, WRIGHT, writeauthor.com. And I've got all my blogs that I've been putting up every Sunday, plus a ton of pictures, Bo Jackson and Howie and everybody else. Or it's on Amazon right now. I recorded the Audible. That'll be up as well. So I'll have the ebook and the hard and soft cover. But I can also love to sign any of these and send it to anybody if they go to the website and put in a request for it. I'd get back to them right away.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I got to ask you, since you mentioned Bo Jackson, because I went and watched Bo Jackson play baseball for a minor league team. You know, that one run he had, they always highlight on the football field. I mean, how fast was Bo Jackson?
From my understanding, I think he was the fastest ever in the 40-yard dash. Truly humble man. I was out there blocking for pretty much every one of his runs. Anytime you see Bo run up into the tunnel in Seattle, I'm kind of right behind him, close by. But his power and strength was absolutely bizarre. And I got some great stories in there from that as well. We were playing, he had been having a couple of really long runs leading up to a Denver game. And we all just started giving him a hard time. Like, would you quit running away from everybody and run somebody over? And so the very next game, it was third down. He ran up the middle, and the only person standing there was Mike Harden, who was tough as nails for the Broncos. Got ready for him to juke or something, but I've never seen hit and run. Like, Bo put his head down and ran him over like he wasn't even standing there. Strong and fast, and did not lift weights at all. And I got a funny story about that as well.
Wow. Well, you look pretty good yourself. What kind of diet did Mama's got you eating over there in Venice Beach?
I've been on a plant-based I've been on plant-based for probably 5 years, and I just started putting fish and turkey and chicken, just not eating red meat. I live on protein shakes. I say in there, I kind of talk about my diet. I always changed through the years. Back when I was a young guy playing, I ate a few pastures of cows, anything with protein in it. And then just got more into the plant-based. And I went from my playing weight about 290. I'm about 230 right now. I'm feeling great. Wow. When I worked out, I was in the pool this morning. We just put a Velcro belt on and tie it to the ladder leading into the pool and swim like a beast in there for a while. And I was at the gym. So just get up and move the body. Eat. We're in bed at 7:30, 8 o'clock. We're up at 4:30. Don't drink. Yeah. So it's a clean lifestyle that both my wife and I are on the same page for.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Well, maybe I think if you keep digging into the Scandinavian and Norse, looking up the Norse gods and all that kind of stuff, I think more stuff might resonate with you that you maybe haven't tapped into yet. Just kind of is what I sense. And if you want to listen, if you want to read, get a good read and hear an interesting story, get the book Aggressively Human by Steve Wright. I think it's very, very interesting, because you know, you think about, like you said, getting amped up and now you're this, you know, calm and doing meditation and all these things. You know, I think people can learn a lot from that, you know, because I think sometimes those sensibilities will take us down the wrong road and we don't know what it is. Things could be misdiagnosed or whatever it is. So I think we've got to, the better we understand ourselves and things like that, I think the better lives we live. I mean, do you feel like, and this is the last question I ask, I just came to me, do you feel like you found yourself and gave more value to yourself now in life than you maybe did earlier?
Yeah, I would think so. You know, it's, I think that comes with maturity. I'd love to be as mature now as I am now back at 21, but I probably wouldn't have as juicy of a book then that I've got now. But yeah, it's a growth process. I'm definitely a lot calmer and introspective and wiser and open heart. Yeah, just want to see the best for everybody. Want to light up everybody with a smile and a hello and just being kind. And yeah, that's all, it's all developed, but you know, I think the roots were there. Again, I was fortunate to, you know, come from a good loving family that, you know, a lot of folks don't come from. So I had a little one up. So anything I can do to help lift somebody or do something else. We've got a nonprofit called Global Giving, B-A-L-L, not global. Global Giving, where we collect used sports equipment, surfboards, tennis rackets, baseballs, everything else. And we're in probably 35 countries. That's globalgiving.org. Probably served probably a million kids by now with our friend Mark Rollison up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the headquarters for all this. So we did that. My wife and I traveled around the world about 3 years ago, right before the pandemic. It took 9 months to travel around the world. Met the Peace Corps down in Tonga and what was the other island down there? I can't think what it was, but just down throughout the South Pacific, handing out equipment and yeah. So
nice.
Answer to your question, but yeah, it's a growth process.
Nice. Well, Steve, I appreciate you coming on the show, and hopefully everybody can learn something from this conversation. That's what I try to do. I try to teach people things about life and give people different perspectives about life. So appreciate you coming on the show. This is Steve Wright, and my name is John Edmonds Cosma, the CEO of Bang Productions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.